For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
And good morning to you. How are you? It's Sunday morning, June 18th, 2017. You have no idea how warm it is in this studio. I'm sure you do. I'm sure it's warm wherever you are if you happen to be in the UK. It's a scorcher. Hottest day of the year is on the way. It's going to be scorching today. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you've enjoyed your weekend thus far. My name is Richie Allen. This is Sunday View, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and richieallen.co.uk. As usual, over the course of the next hour or thereabouts, I'll be looking at the Sunday newspapers, the front pages, the headlines, and the stories behind them. And of course, we'll have one or two interviews or snips or clips from interviews, because the Sunday morning talk shows are on. I've been listening, and of course, I've been recording as well. Looking forward to this one. Tweet at Richie Allen Show, email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Let me know what you're thinking this Sunday. On any of these stories, anything at all, tweet me. It's at Richie Allen Show. I shall read your tweets out. Alrighty. Let's get this show on the road then. At Richie Allen Show on Twitter, richie@richieallen.co.uk.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England, this is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com.
And there's not another one like it anywhere in Europe. Thanks for joining me. Obviously, the newspapers feature a lot of stories about Grenfell Tower and the fallout from it, protests, what could have been done, what should have been done, public inquiries, inquests. We will talk about that as well. The European Union is on the agenda today as well. The Chancellor of the Exchequer, Philip Hammond, and Keir Starmer, the shadow Brexit secretary, both of them talking about what the election result means for the UK's relationship with the European Union, which supposedly we're exiting. We'll talk about these stories and more today on your Sunday View. So let's get rid of the music. Yeah, I've never been lazy in my life. This morning I thought, you know what? It's lovely out there. I could just throw the dog in the car and drive off. Forget all about Sunday View, but I wouldn't do that. Future Mrs. Allen is away. I think she might be listening in France. Good morning, Future Mrs. Allen. Let's crack straight on then. Do bookmark davidicke.com/headlines. Bookmark it now. Pretty much everything I talk about today will be covered in depth on davidicke.com/headlines. Our show was set up, this particular show, to review the Sunday newspapers. But before we do that, I put a post on Facebook last night, and I suppose I was pretty strong in the language I used in terms of saying that it was an outrage. I'll tell you what happened. There is a service station across the road from where I live, around the corner, I should say, from where I live, and it's a BP service station, and there is a supermarket attached to it. It is a Spar supermarket. It's a 24-hour supermarket at the station. So around about 9:30 last night, I popped over there to pick up something, a bar of chocolate or something, that I wanted. And now I know the place and I know the staff very well. I probably should have said that in the post. Now, a young man whom I know to work there approached the front door and he said, "Sorry, mate, we're closed for a few minutes." And I said, "For how long?" He said, "20 minutes. I said, "Why?" And he said, "I'm breaking my fast." He said, "This is Ramadan month, so I'm breaking my fast. We're closed for 20 minutes. Now, I wasn't very impressed. But I must point out, I've never been one of those, you know, minor inconveniences make me fly into a rage. I've never been one of those. There is another corner shop not far from it, and it's not the biggest of deals. But I just thought it was, I thought it was kind of outrageous. And it was nothing against the young man himself, because I know him to serve me. It's more against the company policy. I just thought it was crazy on a Saturday night that there wouldn't have been a non-Muslim person to, or a non, somebody who doesn't pursue the Islamic faith, who could have come to relieve the guy. But the fact that the shop was closed and the pumps were turned off because he was breaking his fast, I just thought it was outrageous. And I did politely say to him that, you know, really, his religious beliefs, which he's absolutely entitled to, and his job should be mutually exclusive. They should be, right? And that, you know, let me in, basically, right? So I can buy what I want. But he said, look, I can't come back in 20 minutes. I said, no problems. I've never been the, you know, the shouty type or the abusive type. So I just said, you know, but I did post on Facebook about it. And I said it was an outrage. You know, in the grand scheme of outrages, it isn't really an outrage, right? But I just thought, there is something wrong with that. It isn't right that anybody's religious beliefs should in any way, even in a small way, be kind of inflicted on somebody else. Not denying him the rights to pursue that religious belief either. I did say it was sinister. And that's because, you know, I was talking about the PC agenda and the lunatic lefties who would, you know, absolutely see that as a black and white situation. He should be allowed to observe his religion. He should be allowed to close that shop door. And I'm like, well, I'd like to know what Spar think about that without dropping the young lad in it. Because I wouldn't contact Spar, name the kid, or even name the place. I would, you know, I would say, look, I used one of your stores recently. And this is what happened. But there were a few interesting comments that came my way. And I'm going to read the negative ones because some of the negative ones are quite funny. Let me scroll down there. Let's have a look. Fifi tweets. Now, there is some bad language in some of these tweets. I'm going to read the bad language, even though it's early on a Sunday. So if you have a kiddie listening, you might want to put ear blockers, ear protectors, or send them out of the room or just stop listening. So there is some bad language, right? Fifi says sarcastically, so Muslims is what's wrong with this country, huh? People's true colours are showing now. Should he fuck off back to Pakistan because we don't meet people like him in our England? Never said anything of the sort. And I'd be fairly hypocritical because I'm not English. I'm Irish. Far from it. Of course he shouldn't be fucked off back to Pakistan. You know, I just thought it was silly that he closed at a very busy time on a Saturday evening. He closed a shop for 20 minutes to break his fast. Right? Fifi went on to say, Richie, why don't you go back to him today and ask why he felt he had the right to close the shop and see what he says? Well, I won't do that because I don't pick on people and I don't bully people. I asked him last night and he said, I'm closing because I'm breaking my fast and that's it. There's no point in asking him to repeat himself again. Instead of hiding behind a computer screen, Richie, if this is an outrage, grow a pair and go back there. Not hiding behind any computer screen at all. I spoke to the gentleman last night. What part of that didn't you understand? Sean sent me a message. Outrage my arse. What happened in London is a fucking outrage. People being left homeless every day is an outrage. People going days on end without food is an outrage. America slaughtering millions in the Middle East and beyond is an outrage. The fact you were asked to wait 20 fucking minutes is not an outrage. Get a fucking man. I think you meant to put grip between the word A and fucking. I don't need a man. I don't want a man in my life. Get a fucking grip, man, he says. And Stephen McClenahan, who obviously was drunk when he sent me this message last night, said, here's hoping no EDL nutter goes around your pinpoint accurate location and hurts someone on your behalf, the Richie Allen Show. Utter garbage. Nobody's going to hurt anybody. And nobody is criticising the man's religion or his right to pursue his faith. I'm not going to be melodramatic and say I would die for it. I wouldn't die for it. But I'll stand alongside him and anybody else who fights for or marches for their right to observe their religion and to practice and to worship. Absolutely. But closing a shop on one of the busiest streets in the city, let alone the Northwest, because I'm breaking my fast, it's a little bit much, right? That was just my point. I'm certainly not turning into some little Englander I couldn't do because I'm not English, you know, or some kind of milder version of Tommy the Scumbag Robinson. I'm not. I'm just saying. Maybe I shouldn't have turned my location finder on the phone and said to the kid, I thought this was England, right? I probably shouldn't have done that. But he was good-humoured enough about it. And I'll see him again. Sometime in the week, I'll pop in for a bunch of bananas or a soft drink, and I'll say hello to him, and that'll be the end of it. I just thought it was a bit strange. Interesting, there were quite a few messages condemning me. Tom tweets, I kind of respect these guys who fast for Ramadan. You might be taking the idea of what your rights are a bit far, Richie. A liberal has got to be a liberal, says Tom. There's a massive amount of comments on this on our Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/The Richie Allen Show. There you are. I'm not turning into some little Englander. I promise you, I'm not, or anything like it. 10 minutes past the hour, Sunday View, in association with davidicke.com. Let's crack on. The Sunday Times front page. Tories tell me you have 10 days. Like the rhyming there. Tories tell me you have 10 days. According to the Sunday Times, May has 10 days to save her job by showing she is fit to be a leader. The paper says that confidence in Mrs. May has been in free fall amongst the Tory faithful, and that constituency bosses have... Excuse me, I had a lot of water to drink. Constituency bosses have told ministers and MPs to get rid of her. Get her out of the job. Now, also on the front page of the Sunday Times is an article written by Sky News presenter Adam Bolton. The headline of Bolton's story is, "When the Queen is our chief consoler, you know the Prime Minister is lost." This is another one of these fawning stories, and there have been many of them in the last few days, gushing over the Queen's visit to Kensington to meet with residents of Tower Blocks and apparently shedding a tear. She didn't shed a tear. She doesn't give a shit. Believe me, the greatest private landowner in the world couldn't give less of a shit about the plight of those people in London, those poor, misfortunate people. Workers, hard-working people, sometimes working two jobs, two zero-hours contract jobs to barely pay the rent at the end of every month and make and meet their bills and their commitments. They don't give a damn about them. The Sunday Telegraph, on the theme of the Sunday Times, staying on the theme of Theresa May, as I should say, May faces threat of stalking horse leadership challenge. Now, this is about the idea that Eurosceptic Tory MPs are threatening May that if she waters down Brexit, if she goes along with the Lib Dem nonsense and some of the Labour Party MP nonsense and waters down the hard Brexit stance, the Sunday Telegraph is saying that Eurosceptic MPs will go after her and will get rid of her. Basically, they're saying she better not waver from the commitment to get out of the customs union and the single market. She better not waver from that. Those are vital, say the Eurosceptic MPs. If she in any way deviates from that line, they will maybe issue or try to get a vote of no confidence against her. Now, this is very interesting, of course, to you and me, because the election was all about weakening May's position as Prime Minister so that it could be spun that people voted against a hard Brexit. We've talked a lot about this, you and I. They didn't. The middle class, the middle income earners and the wealthy income earners voted against the Tories over the suicidal social care plans. It wasn't a vote against hard Brexit. It was not. Last week, I demonstrated this clearly with a number of opinion polls published before May called the election, which showed that people were happy with the hard Brexit stance. The Sunday Observer, the headline is, "Revealed, the Tower Block fire warns..." Yeah, that's right. It's a terrible headline. This is actually the headline. It's a terrible headline. It should read, "Revealed, the Tower Block fire warnings, ministers ignored." "Revealed, the Tower Block fire warnings, ministers ignored." Now, a former fire chief's urgent requests to meet with ministers to tighten rules and regulations on safety on these blocks were stonewalled. That's according to the Sunday Observer, which reports that Ronnie King, who was the secretary of the Parliamentary Group on Fire Safety, said the government seemed to need a disaster in order to change regulations. Some very serious accusations are being made today. It's getting nastier and nastier and nastier. And we've got to watch this very carefully as to who gets blamed and why. Now, they never wanted to make these terror blocks safer. You and I think, agree on that. They wanted to tear them down, sell off the land to developers who make hundreds of millions of pounds selling up market properties. Gentrification. I won't repeat everything I said on Friday. They never wanted to touch up those buildings. Ever. They never wanted to do them up, make them safe. They just wanted to get rid of the people in them. But again, I'm going to say this today. June 18th. Watch this carefully, because there is a lot of screaming and accusations flying around today and yesterday amongst elected officials and amongst senior ministers. And I believe ultimately that the person or persons who get eventually blamed and named in a report will be patsies thrown under the bus by those really responsible. Keep that in mind. Whoever is eventually blamed for it will be a patsy. I'm not saying they won't have any blame, but they will be a patsy ultimately. I'm convinced of it. Now, the Andrew Marr Show broadcasts, as you know, every Sunday morning. And today his guests were Keir Starmer, the shadow Brexit minister under Jeremy Corbyn, Keir Starmer, and the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Philip Hammond. On the blame game, as to who is to blame and what went wrong, here's Keir Starmer in conversation with Andrew Marr.
Do you believe this ghastly event was caused by cuts to local authority budgets and austerity?
Well, can I just first, of course, send my condolences to the families, to the victims and their friends of this human tragedy. I think all of us have been touched simply looking at the images and hearing the stories. We have to tread very carefully. It's clear there are some very, very serious questions that need to be answered about the cladding, about the costing. There's been questions about housing in London for a very, very long time. Lots of issues raised which haven't been answered. So serious questions which require serious answers and accountability.
Has your party been treading carefully, however, because they were very, very quick, the Labour leadership, to say this is caused by austerity, this is the Tories have blood on their hands and all of that kind of stuff. Boris Johnson has accused the Labour Party of playing politics with this.
Well, I think there is understandable anger and frustration. You've seen that from those living in the Tower block and people living in other similar situations. In Camden, in my constituency, there's great anxiety about people living in similar Tower blocks. And I think it's the responsibility of all of us, not only, as it were, to look back
but
and ask
maybe not to feed the flames
but
of anger.
We do have to look forward, because people want reassurance. So I spent Friday with Camden Council looking at the blocks in Camden. I think all politicians have got a duty to look forward now and to say to their own constituents what is going to happen by way of enhanced fire checks in the coming days and weeks.
The cladding issue needed to be looked at again and added, we do not believe that it should take a serious fire in which many people are killed before all reasonable steps are taken towards minimising the risks. That was in 2000. We had another 10 years of Labour government after that.
I think everybody needs to look at why these recommendations over the years have not been implemented. I was Director of Public Prosecutions and I had to look at the 2009 file in relation to where there should be prosecutions. It's clear there's recommendations there that should already have been acted upon, and I think we all need to ask serious questions. It's no good
so
having recommendations.
All parties are to blame for
All parties need to ask serious questions about why recommendations in the past have not been implemented.
And after the Lacanor house fire in South London.
And there will be calls, I believe. I have no doubt there will be calls to tear down the rest of the tower blocks. That is undoubtedly going to be a result of this. Again, watch that carefully. There will be, inside the Sunday newspapers today, there will be a number of articles by various people, various parties, various pressure groups demanding that the buildings are pulled down once and for all. There's no doubt about that. Now, Andrew Marr touched on there the fact that you can't just blame the Tories for this, that Labour were in power long enough themselves, and shouldn't they have changed things as far back as the year 2000? That's a very good question. Have I got that clip there? Yes, indeed. Have a listen to what Starmer said. So Marr makes the point, way back in 2000, this was known about. You could have done something about it then.
The cladding issue needed to be looked at again and added, we do not believe that it should take a serious fire in which many people are killed before all reasonable steps are taken towards minimising the risks. That was in 2000. We had another 10 years of Labour government after that.
I think everybody needs to look at why these recommendations over the years have not been implemented. I was Director of Public Prosecutions and I had to look at the 2009 file in relation to where there should be prosecutions. It's clear there's recommendations there that should already have been acted upon, and I think we all need to ask serious questions. It's no good
so
having
it's
recommendations.
All parties are to blame for
All parties need to ask serious questions about why recommendations in the past have not been implemented.
Yes, I played that twice.
Our position has been set out in the Prime Minister.
What's going on? Yeah, I know what's happening. My player is causing all sorts of chaos there. We'll stop that. Yes, so all parties are to blame. Of course they are. On that, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Philip Hammond, was in the studio with Andrew Marr, and he was asked to explain why the recommendations made after a terror block fire 4 years ago were not implemented, the Locarno fire, right? This is what Hammond had to say to Marr today.
After the Locarno house fire in South London, there was a coroner's inquest, and 4 years ago, the coroner said that the building regulations relating to fire safety had to be looked at again. Has that happened?
Can I just start by offering my condolences to those who've lost family, friends, loved ones in this terrible tragedy, and extending my sympathy to all those in the community who are affected. This is the first time I've been on the media since the fire, so I just want to put that on record. Look, we've looked, obviously, at those recommendations and what's happened to them, my assessment is that we have responded correctly and appropriately to those recommendations. But Andrew,
have you revised those regulations?
It's no good getting a government minister on here and asking me to mark our own homework. The point of having a public inquiry is precisely that a judge will look at those recommendations. He will look at how the government has responded, how landlords have responded, how local authorities have responded, and it will be for the public inquiry to decide definitively whether that has been correctly done or not.
Yeah, I bet you Marr wanted to reach over and punch him in the mouth. All that nonsense. The public inquiry. We'll have to wait for the public inquiry. Let's wait for the public inquiry. This is going to be the stock answer from these people in the coming weeks. When there isn't any need for an inquiry to explain why recommendations which were made after another terror block fire were not implemented. Let's not wait for the inquiry. That was on your watch. Why weren't they implemented? We're going to have to wait for the inquiry. I could imagine Marr wanting to slap his silly puss. But you know, there is some journalist left in Marr just about because he did press him further on it. And this is how it went.
You've had 4 years to do something you were told needed to be done, and you haven't done it. You'd have done it within 5 minutes if it had been Buckingham Palace. With these tower blocks, you have sat on this for 4 years.
No, I don't think that's true, and it's not fair. I think the point is, these are very complex technical issues. And in this case, technical expert research was commissioned so that the decisions could be properly informed. Now, did it take too long? Did we handle it in the correct way?
Yes. Surely.
Well, the inquiry will determine that. Mm. That's the point of having a judge-led public inquiry with full power to call anyone to give evidence, to call for all papers. That will put all of this stuff under the microscope and show how different parties responded. And all of that should be looked at. Of course it should.
More horse manure. Let's wait for the inquiry. Again, we don't need an inquiry to know that recommendations weren't adopted. That's criminal negligence. And that's not a cheap shot by me. It is criminal negligence. You have a tower block fire. Experts in fire safety come to the government and say, there are other tower blocks in the city. We need to upgrade them. We need to work on them. And as a government, you don't do it. Criminal negligence, tantamount to manslaughter. It is. Because they never had any intention of improving the conditions of those buildings. Never. Never. Now back to Keir Starmer, Labour shadow Brexit secretary. He was asked about whether or not there should be an inquest or an inquiry. This is important because people in the area who knew people who died or family members of people who died are saying a public inquiry is not enough. It's got to be an inquest. This is what Starmer had to say.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, there's a criminal investigation. I spoke to the DPP yesterday and there are prosecutors already in advising the police. So the criminal investigation really has to come first. Normally, an inquest will only take place at the end of the criminal investigation. So the idea of an inquiry is important because that can, in some circumstances, happen much more quickly. And I think speed is of the essence here.
And to be clear, we'd be talking about manslaughter charges.
Yes. When we were looking at this, when I was DPP, in relation to other fires, we were looking at manslaughter charges. There are wider regulatory offences, but I think manslaughter is the most serious, and that's the one that needs to be looked at first. And a public inquiry allows things to happen more quickly and allows a broader range of questions. And inquests come usually at the end of the exercise.
So you need both. OK.
Well, that's nonsense. You don't usually get an inquest at the end of a public inquiry. He's a liar. He is a liar. And Andrew Marr should have nailed him to the wall. There's a massive difference in a public inquiry and an inquest. In a public inquiry, it's a review of things that have happened, a review by the government. Evidence is heard and hearings are conducted in public. That's the way it is. Recommendations can be made at the end of it. The conclusions of whichever inquiry it is given to, in the form of a written report, is given to the government. And after the government gets it, it's then published so the public can see it. Recommendations can be made which improve the quality of government or management of public organisations or whatever. Right? That's a public inquiry. That's not good enough. An inquest is a judicial inquiry which is held to figure out how and why somebody died. A judge, a jury, or a government official carries it out. They might get an autopsy done. Inquests are usually, I know this by rote, when there are sudden and unexplained deaths, you usually get an inquest. And it's usually called by a prosecutor, judge, or a coroner, usually. And that's usually because the public have said, we want an inquest. Now, the public in the Kensington area have clearly stated they want an inquest. We want an inquest. So a judge, any prosecutor, any coroner can say, I agree, we have to have an inquest. You know, any number of verdicts can come out of an inquest. Accidental death, misadventure, murder, manslaughter, suicide. And if the verdict is manslaughter or murder, criminal prosecutions will follow. And suspects will be given a chance to defend themselves in court. This is why there has to be an inquest and not a public inquiry. I know I said this on Friday, for those of you who don't miss the programme and you hear all the programmes, but it's vital that we don't lose sight of that and get lost in this public inquiry bollocks, because they're saying, oh, well, it'll be quicker and that's good for people because they want answers. No, people don't want some report, written report given to the government that can be watered down, that can be spun and then given to the public with no punishment for those responsible. Okay? Right. So what about sprinklers? Why weren't sprinklers retrofitted to the building and other buildings? Wait until you hear what the Chancellor, Philip Hammond, says to Andrew Marr about sprinklers. You won't believe your ears.
And again, I'm not an expert, but my understanding is that the best expert advice is that retrofitting sprinklers may not always be the best technical way of ensuring fire safety in a building. Now, if it is, it should be done.
Let's get
the technical advice properly evaluated by a public inquiry, and then let's decide how to go forward.
But can I put it to you, if there's something that
needs to be done to make buildings safe, it will be done.
Can I put it to you that I'm not an expert either, that we don't actually need technical expertise to tell us that sprinklers
Absolutely.
Help put out fires, and a lot of people sitting in blocks like that one will be watching this programme thinking, there are no sprinklers outside my staircase, why not? We don't need technical expertise. The Fire Brigades Union has pointed out that there has never been a case of anyone losing their life in a fire in this country where sprinklers have been fitted.
Well, these are technical questions.
No, they're not.
Let's leave it to the...
I've been in these meetings. Of course we've asked all these questions.
I'd have been fired if I was Mara there. I like to think of myself as a professional. I like to think of myself as mild-mannered. But I'd have knocked him out for that. What utter reprehensible, monumental bullshit that is. How can you sit there on live television and not acknowledge that Andrew Marr is right? Sprinklers put out fires. Full stop. Why were sprinklers not fitted to the buildings? Because they wanted to tear the buildings down. They wanted rid of the people. The buildings were to get into a state of such dilapidation. At the same time, you are cutting funding to local authorities that public-private initiatives are launched and private landlords come in to take responsibility for the buildings. You know what that means? It means that the government of Theresa May and David Cameron and Nick Clegg, the coalition, they should be up on a manslaughter charge. I'm not saying that for drama or for a cheap headline. These people, that's why there has to be an inquest. These motherfuckers should never inhabit public office again so long as they live. Because through monumental corruption, overwhelming corruption in the city, these politicians are bought and sold and owned by these developers. And decisions were made to let these buildings get into such a state of fuckery that the private sector could come in and take them off the hands of the local authority. It is manslaughter by any other definition, and my anger is genuine. How dare any government minister sit on national television and argue that, I've seen reports that the sprinklers are not really that effective. Marr should have knocked him out. I'd have found the money to pay Andrew Marr's retirement expenses if he'd have done that. That's untenable. That's disgraceful. Then Marr nails him to the wall, to be fair to Marr. And wait for this, dear listener, wait for this. Marr says to him, or asks him, Chancellor, did you vote against a bill that would have ensured private landlords had to make their properties fit for human habitation? Did you vote against forcing private landlords to make their properties fit for human habitation?
Okay, last year there was a vote in the House of Commons to ensure that all private landlords, not the ones here, private landlords ensure their homes were fit for human habitation. How did you vote?
I think that was a private member's bill. I don't think I voted on it, but
it was an amendment to the Housing and Planning Bill.
Okay. Well, I can't answer your question.
You voted against it.
It'll be a matter of record.
My point is that your political critics say that the Conservatives have launched this war against the so-called elf and safety culture.
By the way, Hammond knowingly lied on national television there. You heard Hammond lie twice. First of all, I abstained. I didn't vote, he said. And second of all, he said, I have no idea how I voted. Now, in my vision of utopia, he should be fired on the spot by the Conservative Party later. Well, of course, if they fired him, they'd have to fire them all. Lying through his teeth on national television. I think I abstained. In fact, I abstained. I don't remember how I voted. You didn't abstain, and you voted against ensuring private landlords had to keep their properties fit for human habitation. What a disgusting scumbag, eh?
Culture, sneering at it at every possible opportunity. Regulation's always bad, and you have pushed far too far.
No, regulation isn't always bad. Good regulation is what we need. And we have a proper regulatory framework. Now, obviously, there are questions about it, and it's right that the public inquiry should look at those questions. But it's not the right way to run a regulatory framework just to accept amendments that people table to try and change it
fit
in this
for human
way.
Habitation seems all right, isn't it?
Well, we have a framework that makes sure that buildings are safe and fit for habitation. What we have to do is make sure that framework is right, and then also make sure that it is being enforced and implemented in the correct way. And these are legitimate questions.
These people are going to a very dark place. I don't believe in God. I don't believe in the God I was brought up to believe. I don't believe in the Catholic, the Christian, the Jewish, the Muslim God, or any of that old garbage as I see it. But these people are going to a dark place when their time in this reality is over. I'm certain of it. This is Sunday View. We've never had as many tweets on any Sunday View that we've ever done. I'm going to get through as many of them as I can after this very short break. Sunday View in association with DavidIke.com. I'm having some morning, technically, me, right? I'm going to try that again. Let's try that again. Quick break, back in a minute with your tweets on Sunday View on DavidIke.com.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique people. pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
Right, I'm going to read out some tweets. Because of the way they come into me, I'm going to read the most recent first, okay? Those are the damned tweets. They wanted them out, Richie, so they could sell the land for private landlords and make millions out of it. Shocking liars. Karen tweets, the dark place you're speaking of, they'd probably all enjoy it, Richie, says Karen. In Glasgow. Thanks, Karen. I hope not, Karen. Mark tweets, exactly, Richie. These fecking animals also blamed the Liverpool fans for Hillsborough. The truth was buried for 25 years along with 96 poor souls. Yes, they did, Mark. They blamed with no feeling or no thought for the families of the people who died. They blamed the innocent football supporters and tried to stitch them up for their own incompetencies at Hillsborough in 1989. For years, you're absolutely right. Lies were told by The Sun and Kelvin McKenzie. Lies were invented about pickpocketing supporters and all of that garbage. You know, you're talking about levels of evil here to accuse people of that at their worst time. I'll never forget it. I was in hospital with pneumonia, believe it or not, when Hillsborough happened. And yeah, I was brought up a Manchester United supporter. And I was devastated as a kid. I was 14, 15. I was watching. I couldn't believe it. And we knew in Ireland, you know, shortly after they started bringing out these stories about how the fans were to blame, we knew it was nonsense. Absolute nonsense, you know. We knew. Tiger says if Theresa May calls for an inquiry and not an inquest, she will probably be physically removed from number 10 and thrown into a cell. I'm not sure, mate, that will happen, but I wouldn't mind seeing it. GP Brown tweets, multiple occupancy houses have to abide even by all the health and safety requirements, so why not these corporations? That's a very good question. Hi to Jay Ferguson, by the way. Hi to Shona Dryden. How you doing, Shona? Who sent me a tweet about the Queen visiting the affected people. I've got a couple of stories on that in a couple of seconds time as well. Hi, Annalisa, who's in Manchester, originally a Dutch, from Holland. Nice to know you're listening, Annalisa, as well. Salika tweets, after Tuesday, the people don't know where they are going. Shame on the government and Kensington Council. That is a disgrace, but that is why they are blaming. You'll probably know this. I should have maybe mentioned this at the top of the programme, but Kensington and Chelsea Council have effectively been sacked. And the government has sent in a team of civil servants there to do the job of the council because there have been so many complaints by victims' family members saying that they're not being taken seriously by the council and they're not getting any answers. So apparently the council is gone and government civil servants have gone in there to effect a cover-up, maybe? Just maybe, I don't know, I can't say that with any, I can't prove it, but just maybe, you know, that's an interesting one. On the surface, that looks good, doesn't it? Hi to Peter Richmond, by the way, and hi to Stephen Guinness, who asked me, do I think the media are suppressing the true number of fatalities at Grenfell Tower? Stephen, I don't know. I'm not in a position to answer that. We know what the media is and what it does, and we know the media is basically the propaganda wing of the establishment. I don't know. I can only imagine. You know, I've heard people say that, you know, in some of these places, in some of these apartments, there were maybe more people living there than was officially known about, you know, because of poverty. So it's quite possible that there's a massive amount, you know, that the number is huge. Some people are saying 200, 300. I don't know anything about that. Everything is possible, I would say Stephen. Good morning, La Antenna. Good morning, Shona. Good morning, Chris, who says you won't see any fires at Buckingham Palace where those free riders live. What was the hotel? What was the palace that went on fire all those years ago? One of their palaces went on fire. It was one in London, wasn't it? Help me out here. There was a fire at one of their palaces some years ago. Thanks for all those tweets. Hi to Stephen Lash, friend of ours, good supporter of the programme. Stephen is in Manchester as well. Stephen says, Richie, tearing down council tower blocks. It's already on the Sky News banner this morning. That's exactly right, Stephen. This is going to be the suggestion. Hi to John Brown, who's in Newcastle upon Tyne. How you doing, John? I've got to go to work, he says. I'll be listening to the podcast later on. So it'll be later when you hear me, mate. But I hope you're having a good day and a good weekend. Hi to Justin View, to Pagan Priestess as well, to Yvonne, to Scott, to Kate Coley, my mate in Manchester as well. Morning, Kate, and to David Mortimer. How you doing, David? Massive amount of tweets on this particular subject. And as I was reading, more and more tweets were coming in as well. 19 minutes to midday. Remember, if you're listening to the podcast or listening on YouTube, we record this at 11 a.m. Things might have happened in the interim period. It wasn't that I wasn't awake, it's just that the show is recorded at this time. Hi to Charlotte Binns, Windsor Castle. Charlotte, thank you very much. That's the one. Windsor Castle. Brian Broderick as well, Mark and everybody else. It was Windsor Castle. That's right. And I think the taxpayer had to cough up for the repairs. Right, back to the papers then. I kind of lost the run of myself there, didn't I? The Sunday Mirror. The headline is Prince of Compassion. There's a massive front page picture of Prince William hugging a woman who was affected by the tragedy. Prince of Compassion. It gets worse in the Sunday Express. Prepare the vomit bucket. Get the vomit bucket handy. Quick, quick. The Sunday Express headline is Queen calms shaken nation. What a monumental load of old bollocks that is. Queen calms shaken nation. Be resolute and rebuild lives, said the Queen. Bollocks, utter bollocks. The greatest private landlord in the world. Give me a break. And there's a load of Theresa May doom stories in there as well, in the Express. In the Sunday People, the front page headline of the Sunday People is Tower Block safety checks were cut by a quarter, which is more on the lack of maintenance at the blocks. The criminal, criminal lack of maintenance at these tower blocks. We told you why we believe that was the case. The Star on Sunday, the headline is Cowell's Song to Raise £5 million for Fire Victims. Jesus wept. That's just what people need now. The despicable Simon Cowell. Again, we talked about this last week as well. The Mail on Sunday headline, front page, writ large. The headline is, May, I've let down the fire families. You think so, love? You think so? And in the Mail it says, Theresa May has 10 days to save her job. We've heard this earlier on. MPs are lining up to demand a new leadership contest because of the election, because of her handling of the Grenfell Tower fire. Her numbers have never been as bad. Corbyn is 20, 25 points ahead of her now in terms of her approval figures. It's absolutely brutal. Those are the papers there. It's exactly 16 minutes to the top of the hour. Let me read a couple of more tweets. And then there's a fascinating story in The Guardian, which you mightn't have seen. I think you'll be very interested in it. Hi to Rich Mortimer. Rich says, Richie, if they have a leadership election, that's all we hear about again. All those other things going on in Yemen, etc., are not being spoken about. Distraction, says Rich. That's a good point. There are multiple benefits from the horrors of what happened at Grenfell Tower. Multiple benefits for the establishment. Multiple benefits. People have been burned to death. People like me and you. And all sorts of, you know, skullduggery is going on in the background. The media are not talking about Syria, about Yemen. The media are demanding the tower blocks to be torn down. What happens to those families then? Well, they're kicked out of the city altogether is what happens. Milton Keynes are sent off elsewhere. They're uprooted and torn away from the place where they were born and they grew up and where they have their emotional ties so that billionaires can do what billionaires do. Hi to David Pigeon as well. David says that the death toll is being increased gradually because David reckons that helps to keep the backlash more manageable. That might be the point. That might be a good point, David. You could argue that. You could make that argument. Let's move on. It is roasting in this studio. There is no... I'm going to have some water. There is no... save it for me. There's no aircon. It's not soundproof. I have the windows open. I'm waiting for one of my neighbours to start lawn mowing. I'm waiting for a lawnmower to start. Anyway. Some water. It's going down well, the water. I had a couple of Bacardis yesterday. Stupid thing to do in that heat yesterday. Didn't suit me at all. Here's a hugely important story in The Guardian and The Sunday Observer. Of course, one and the same, more or less. Here's the headline. Wealth gap rises as home ownership falls, says study. I'm going to read you some of the article. Wealth gap rises as home ownership falls, says study. A fall in home ownership is fueling the return of rising wealth inequality across Britain. Booming house prices in the run-up to the financial crisis had led to a decade-long fall in the uneven distribution of the country's wealth. However, comprehensive new analysis of the UK's wealth divisions has now found the trend has gone into reverse. The Resolution Foundation think tank commissioned the study, and it found that just one-tenth of adults own around half of the nation's wealth. Eh? One-tenth of adults own half of the nation's overall wealth. So that's 10% of adults own 50% of the nation's wealth. And the study goes on to say the top 1% owns 14% of the wealth in total. The survey and study warns even this figure might be an underestimation because of the difficulties in finding out just how much the super rich actually have. And by contrast, 15% of adults in Britain have no share of the nation's record £11.1 trillion of wealth. Or they have negative wealth. They're up to their tits, excuse my French, in debt. The study found that wealth is distributed far less evenly than earnings or household income. They used a coefficient called the Gini coefficient, with zero being perfect wealth equality and one representing a society where a single person has it all. Wealth inequality was twice as high as earnings inequality. Despite the perception that wealth inequality has been rising for decades, the research found that the inequality of net financial and property wealth fell steadily between 1995 and 2005, but it's on the way back up. It went down because of high and rising home ownership. But it was always meant to be the case that it looked like things were on the up and up. Many times have we said on programmes before, as people were getting to buy their own homes from the banks in the 90s and in the noughties, it looked to these surveys like everything was balancing out and that wealth distribution was becoming more equal in society. It all looked like it was on the up and up, but it was monumental bollocks because people were buying houses, taking out mortgage loans from banks at desperate interest rates, loans they were never meant to be able to pay back so that the bank could eventually take the property, right? We've spoken about this a million times on the programme. And this is a programme of Agenda 21, Agenda 30. See David's books. All part of it. And David talks about dot connecting. You factor into that austerity. You factor into that benefit sanctions. Squeezing the sick and disabled. Squeezing the poor. Is all meant to drive that inequality gap further and further and further and further. Make it wider and wider and wider. Oh, it all looks on the up and up when people are taking out mortgages. Most people I know, and I mean this sincerely, who took out a mortgage in their mid-20s, who were my age. So the people I went to school with, most of them are back in rented accommodation and they had to sell the house for one reason or another. Again, a policy of the Hunger Games Society agenda. It's an excellent story, that, and it's in the Observer today. But it takes a misstep, does the story, when it says that there was better equality when people owned their homes in the 90s and noughties. People never owned their homes. They had a mortgage with a bank that they were never meant to be able to pay back. Again, we could do a whole show on that. 9 minutes to the top of the hour. Here's a little bit more from the Sunday morning talk shows. Thanks for all your tweets, by the way. Paul tweets, good morning, Richie. Perhaps it's time to dust off that block wood in the Tower of London, says Paul. Anne tweets, close the curtains and windows in the day, open the windows at night to keep the place cool. You wouldn't open the windows to let in the cold, says Anne. That's old school thinking, Anne. I like that. These are the damned came back to say Buckingham Palace is under a 10-year refit as we speak, being paid by the taxpayers, costing £369 million. It is indeed. Gail tweets, are these poor people and their souls a sacrifice to the evil ones? Again, something we've gotten into on the programme in the past. I have no problem with that or discussing that at all. Keep your tweets coming in. It's at Richie Allen Show. Kate tweets, lots of people bought council houses and most of them lost them. It was awful. I remember it happening. Absolutely, Kate. It was meant to be so. That's how they privatised the houses. They made it look like a good thing. They made it look like a great thing. Well, you've been renting that house for years. You should buy it. You're entitled to buy it. You know, you've been there for years. Take out a low interest mortgage. We'll give you the house at a good price. And there was a reason why people were in those affordable, rented, social housing owned by local authorities. There was a reason, because they couldn't afford mortgages. So when they took out mortgages, they couldn't afford them, or they built up equity in the house and decided to cash in. One way or another, they ended up losing the house. Anyway, always part of the plan. We've talked about it so much on this programme, I won't dwell on it. Now, today I mentioned at the top of the programme, Brexit is all over the news as well as Grenfell Tower. Back to the Andrew Marr show. The Chancellor of the Exchequer, Philip Hammond, was asked by Marr. He was asked about Brexit, and he was specifically asked if the Tories were going to change their approach to Brexit after the election, of course, in which they lost their majority. This is what Philip Hammond said.
Well, our position has been set out in the Prime Minister's Lancaster House speech. That was generally well received in the European Union. Of course, we're going into a negotiation. It's not surprising that there's been a bit of posturing and chest beating coming from Brussels. We'd expect that. But what I hear, and I was in Luxembourg at the ECOFIN meeting on Friday, what I hear from my colleagues is a remaining commitment, a continuing commitment to engage constructively with the UK and a desire to have a close ongoing relationship with the UK. And that's good news.
But to those in the Tory party who call you a Remainer, Phil, can you say we're definitely leaving the EU, absolutely on my watch, and we're definitely leaving the single market on my watch?
Yes.
To both of those?
Definitely. We're leaving the EU, because we're leaving the EU, we will be leaving the single market. And by the way, we'll be leaving the customs union. The question is not whether we're leaving the customs union. The question is, what do we put in its place in order to deliver the objectives which the Prime Minister set out in the Lancaster House?
Right, so he goes on to talk about how it's important that British goods are not left languishing in countries where they have been sent, lying in warehouses and all of that. It's all very good. We know all that, and it should be the same for goods coming here from overseas. They shouldn't be left to rot in warehouses, blah, 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 blah. Lovely. But he reiterated again, leave the single market, leave the customs union. That's what people wanted. That's what we should be giving people. So Keir Starmer, the Brexit secretary, Labour politician, of course, under Jeremy Corbyn, he was asked the same question with Starmer. What about Brexit? What about the negotiations? This is what he had to say.
How do you think the general election result has changed the negotiating position Britain should take for Brexit?
Well, I think the Prime Minister's got us into a complete mess. She's got no mandate here, and she's got no authority abroad, and the negotiations start tomorrow. And things have to change. Her approach so far has alienated our allies in Europe. It's weakened our position with the EU.
Okay.
And it's actually got us into the worst possible starting position.
But you see, what people say to me is that actually, when you look at it, Labour's position on Brexit is identical to Theresa May's position. So let me test that, if I may, with some yes or no questions, if I can.
Yes.
First of all, do you accept that we are leaving the EU come what may?
Yes, we've been clear about the absolute start.
Okay, second, are you against a second referendum?
A second referendum cannot take place
until
after we've left the EU, and therefore it's not viable.
So that's not viable. Okay, third question. Are there any circumstances in which you think Britain should stay inside the single market?
Well, so far as the single market is concerned, our manifesto is clear. We want to retain the benefits of the single market and the customs union. Full membership is only available to EU member states. And that's why there's all the discussion about what sort of model that gets us close to membership.
So that sounds to me like a no, we cannot stay inside the single market.
Not in an unreformed, unchanged way, because you have to be a full EU member, and that's not consistent.
You see, you're not quite giving me a clear answer on that. You think the single market could be changed or reformed in a way that allows us to stay inside. Is that right?
I think the mistake we're all making here is to put the model before the outcome. What we want is tariff-free access to the single market, no customs duties that make it more difficult for people to trade in the future. That's what really matters. And the flip side of that, from the EU point of view, is how do we make sure there's a level playing field? How do we make sure that regulations apply across the board? That's what we're talking about. It's the outcome, and getting in the weeds of the model, actually.
A lot of fluffing going on there.
Loses the focus on the outcome.
A lot of fluffing going on there. What about the single market? What does Starmer say about that?
Would you sacrifice control over freedom of movement in order to stay inside the single, or have very good access to the single market?
This is a very good question. Mara is saying to Starmer, would you give up freedom of movement, basically? Would you allow freedom of movement return? Would you allow it in order to get the best possible access to the single market? This is what Starmer said.
Good.
It's clear that freedom of movement will end when we leave the EU, and therefore the discussion we're having is what model fits with changes to freedom of movement plus the trade that we need.
So you could have some freedom of movement remaining.
Well, I don't understand this notion of some freedom of movement. Mm. In the end, immigration comes down to...
Sound like, in a very gentle way, you're saying exactly what Theresa May would say if she was sitting there.
No, Theresa May has taken the wrong approach. The tone and approach is completely wrong. I say we can't have membership because that was decided last year. We can have partnership if we change the tone and approach.
Okay.
We need to be much clearer about the benefits
of the
single market.
That's tone and words. But on the actual clear... Well, let me try one other thing. Customs union, in or out?
Well, I think that should be left on the table.
We could stay inside the customs union?
Yes.
Well, that is the single biggest difference between you and the Conservative Party.
But there's also this notion of no deal being a viable deal, which Theresa May and the government have repeatedly said.
No deal is a viable deal. If the deal is not good enough, no deal is good. And then you revert to World Trade Organization terms, which are most favoured. You know, you must offer most favoured member terms to the UK. I've explained this in great detail in other programmes. It's madness. They're working their way up to a referendum next year. They won't admit it. Where it'll be said that there's not the same appetite for leaving the European Union as there was in June 2016. We need to look at it again. Not long after the referendum, I made that prediction. I know my predictions are diabolical when it comes down to it. Not got a great track record. But ultimately, I understand the reasoning behind what these people do, even if sometimes they don't do exactly what you think they will do. But the cabal, the elite, whatever you want to call them, will never stand for the UK leaving the union. So some sort of association membership that you can sell to those who want to leave the European Union, you can sell it to them as leaving, but it wouldn't really be leaving, and Brussels law would still supersede UK law. That's ultimately where I think this is going. Sometime in 2018, that's what I think. Anyway, listen, that's it for Sunday View. It is an absolute scorcher right across the UK. I think it's the same in God's country, in the Republic of Ireland. I know what I said about God earlier on. Don't be throwing that at me. I'm sure it's lovely wherever you are. Enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you for giving me your time, for listening to me. I really appreciate it. Look after yourselves and one another. I'll be back with you live tomorrow at 8 p.m. British, excuse me, 7 p.m. British summer time. That's 7 p.m. British summer time tomorrow. Have a marvellous Sunday. Thank you for your company. I really mean that. Bye now.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.